President Franklin Delano Roosevelt considered his savvy personal secretary, Marguerite Alice Missy LaHand, one of the most vital and certainly one of the most loyal members of his inner circle. He often remarked that Missy was his conscience. She worked with FDR for more than 20 years, starting from his first failed vice presidential campaign in 1920 through his time as governor of New York and for almost a decade in the White House. Catherine Smith has written a biography of Missy LaHand. It is entitled The Gatekeeper, Missy LaHand, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency. Catherine Smith will be speaking tonight at the FDR Library and Museum in Hyde Park, New York, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Catherine, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, glad to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to Missy LaHand as a subject?
I just thought she was fascinating. I've always loved FDR. I had a grandfather from Georgia who was what we call a yellow dog Democrat. He would vote for a yellow dog if it was running on the Democratic ticket. And he adored FDR because of the way the New Deal had helped him and his family during the Depression. So I always had an interest in FDR because of my grandfather. And as I read more and more over him about him during my life, I was always seeing this woman, Missy LaHand, right behind his shoulder, and I thought, you know, she must have had the coolest job. I'd love to read a biography about her, and then I found that no one had ever written one, so I decided to write it myself.
What was it about her that allowed her such access? I mean, I want to go through the story, but the fact that she took on all of these roles, what were the personal qualities that she had that made her a perfect fit with FDR?
Well, she was a really good facilitator. She was someone who knew how to get things done. She was very loyal. She was she wasn't unquestioning about FDR, but she certainly agreed with the things that he supported and always reminded him about the common man, which was where she came from. That was her background. And they just jihad. They had a similar sense of humor. They had to cut up and just kind of kick back and have a drink together. And I think the long period also when she was the main adult with him when he was recovering from polio from 1923 to 1928, it just really drew them close together.
How did he come to hire her?
She was the staff secretary for his campaign in 1920. He ran, he was the running mate of a man named James N. Cox, and they were trounced by that charismatic ticket of Warren G. Harding and Calvin Coolidge. So after that, he went into the private sector to earn some money, and he asked Missy to be his private secretary. So she was working for him at his law firm and in a securities company on Wall Street in 1921 when he got polio.
And then how does she then become, as the title of the book suggests,
the gatekeeper,
the person who is in charge of all?
Well, the person who guards the entry to the office of the king or the throne room of the king.
Right.
I think it was just the combination that the trust, the loyalty, and that she just had all the skills that you needed to have to be a very good private secretary. It just evolved over many, many years together.
So you write about this in the book, but there's a difference between being a secretary and even being a personal secretary and someone who morphs into the role of what we would think of now as a chief of staff.
Well, what you got to remember, Joe, is that at Roosevelt's White House, secretary was the ultimate job. There were four secretaries who worked for him when he went into office in 1933. Louis Howe, that's the name that most people know, was his political advisor and image maker. Steve Early was his press secretary. Marvin McIntyre was his appointment secretary, and Missy did everything else. So over time, Louis's health really declined. He was living under an oxygen tent in the White House by 1935, and he died the next year. And more of his duties started going to Missy. So she just kind of evolved into the role. But we also have to remember that FDR always held on to the strings of everything. He liked to think of himself as his own Secretary of State, his own Secretary of the Navy. So it's not the kind of chief of staff job that I think we think of today, but it's close.
And yet you write that she was a persuasive voice within policy decisions and mm-hmm. appointments. When there was a big decision to be made, her voice mm-hmm. was heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a really great example of that. Just to set the stage, when he took office, he was elected in November 32, and that was the last time that a president was not inaugurated until the next March. So in that interim, the unemployment rate had hit 25%. FDR had been the target of an assassination attempt that had actually killed the governor of Chicago, and the banking system was about ready to go over the cliff. And then to top all that off, the man that he had appointed to be attorney general died on the way to the inauguration. He had he was in a train. He had just been married to a much younger woman, and she was with him, and we don't know what happened, presumption beyond his powers, perhaps, and he died. So no one had an idea for another attorney general except Missy, and she suggested a man named Homer Cummings, who had been the DNC chairman and was a well-known lawyer, and they offered the job to him, and he took it. She also advised him on Supreme Court appointments, and, you know, just they had a lot of time together when it was just the two of them. After hours talking in his Oval study, he had an Oval office downstairs and an Oval study upstairs. Missy lived in the White House the whole time she worked there, so she was accessible around the clock.
This is something interesting that you write about in the book, but talk a little bit about the relationship between Missy and Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah, Missy was, she helped FDR become a great president, but she also helped Eleanor Roosevelt become a great lady, because from the time FDR was governor of New York, Missy was living with the family, and Eleanor even then had a very busy schedule. She traveled a lot. She taught 3 days a week in New York City, and she could leave the governor's mansion in Albany and later the White House not having to worry that things wouldn't get done, because Missy would back her up as hostess. So in Albany, she was, you know, presiding over teas and dinners and supervising the staff and ordering the groceries. And the White House, if Eleanor was away, and she was away sometimes for weeks and months at a time, she could count on Missy to fulfill her duties as a hostess. Her Secret Service name was Rover, and out in the country she was known as Eleanor everywhere, because she was just always on the go. So that was a really important relationship, and Missy and Eleanor were very, very fond of each other. I don't think there was tension there. Whenever Missy had a problem or was ill, Eleanor would just swoop in and take care of her, and the notes between them were very affectionate.
She was on the cover of Time magazine in 1934.
Yeah. With I mentioned the secretariat, the three men and Missy, and they were together on the cover of Time as the White House secretariat. There were only three Time covers in all of 1934 with a woman on the front. One was the fashion designer Elsa Schiaparelli. The other was a group of child welfare activists, including Eleanor Roosevelt. And then the third was that one that had Missy on the cover. Pretty amazing, huh?
It is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the thought behind why she is not, given mm-hmm. that notoriety of mm-hmm. why she is not more well known today? Yeah. And as you point out in the book, and when she is written about, it's often
yeah.
wrong, because mm-hmm. she's often linked to a romantic relationship with the president, which yeah. you say probably did not occur.
Well, there's no reason to think it did, but we really don't know. Missy and FDR were very discreet people, and neither of them kept a diary. Missy was always very adamant that she did not plan to write her memoirs. She's about the only person around FDR who didn't, but she died before he did. She died when she was only 47. So I think one of the reasons was that her papers were taken away from the White House by her assistant, Grace Tully, many of them, and they didn't surface until the 80s. And she didn't have children. She wasn't married, and her family was not a powerful family. She was a woman. She was a private secretary. Just all those reasons. And pulling together all the different sources for the book, I've just come to have such an appreciation for just how important she was. Some of the most interesting things came from her great nieces, Jane Scarborough and Barbara Jakes, who inherited these items from their mothers, who were Missy's nieces, and they were like her surrogate children. And you just see how integral she was. But one of the really cool things is that she had left behind a bunch of home movies she'd taken, and there are these great scenes like Eleanor Roosevelt on ice skates and even one of FDR sitting in a wheelchair, which is very rare. And at Hyde Park, we'll be showing about a five-minute clip from those home movies that have never been seen, really just outside the family and me. So that'll be a real treat for the audience.
I threw a lot of questions at you just a moment ago, and the first one that I would like to go back to, and that is this idea of why she has been forgotten by history.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like I said, that she didn't leave an archive behind. Like so many people were just, kept all their papers together or else they wrote something. It was very hard to tell her story. Missy had a massive stroke in 1941 when she was 44 years old. And she had to leave the White House after that. So she wasn't really in any shape to tell a story to anyone or to keep any records, and just kind of disappeared from sight. So I think that's one reason. And then there was just always kind of that wink-wink that, she was the president's in-house mistress, or she was just kind of this love-starved secretary. But when I went back and started reading the memoirs of other people who worked closely with her, their respect of her was tremendous. Harold Ickes, who was the Secretary of Interior, kept a secret diary every night of his life when he was in Washington, and he was always talking about how important Missy was and how crucial it was to have her favor, and that she was the only one who could get to the president sometimes, and that kind of thing. So that really gave me a greater appreciation for how good she was at her job.
You talk about her stroke and great medical expenses afterwards, and those were picked up by the Roosevelt family.
They were. FDR paid all of her medical expenses, and we've all known someone who's had a massive stroke that's partly paralyzed them, made it very difficult for them to speak, and that's what happened to Missy. And he, in the aftermath of that stroke, he brought in medical experts from all over the country to see her. But there just really wasn't much that could be done. So when she finally went home to her family in Massachusetts, he paid to have a nurse live with them. He paid all of her rehab expenses. She went to the Chelsea Naval Hospital for rehab. He just really took care of her. And then he would send movie tickets so she could go see the movies, and would even send a car and driver to pick her up and that kind of thing. But I think the sad thing is that after she left the White House, he never saw her again. World War II was in full swing by then, and he was very absorbed in that. But I think FDR just had a really hard time grappling with the changes that had overcome her, because she was in a wheelchair by then, and it was awfully tough.
What is the Missy Lehan collection?
That is the papers of her great nieces, Barbara and Jane. And they are now on offer to be sold as a collection by Glenn Horowitz, who's a rare book dealer in New York. And it includes the letters, the photographs, a lot of other memorabilia from her White House years. And it's quite an interesting collection. The famous photographer Margaret Bourke White did a portrait of Missy, and that's in that collection. Also in it are signed portraits of the King and Queen of England from the time they visited in 1939. They gave these beautiful portraits of themselves in leather frames to Missy. So that's all part of that collection.
And you had access to that collection for the book?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a wonderful time working with these great nieces, Barbara and Jane. And they were just really eager for Missy's story to be told finally, and it really was just kind of a convergence. I was working on it from my home in South Carolina, and one of them lives in Virginia, the other in Connecticut, and they were looking for someone who could write the story. So we just kind of all came along the same, different paths to the same conclusion. They're very pleased about their great aunt's story finally being told. They're very proud of her.
Catherine Smith will be in conversation with FDR Library Museum Director Paul Sparrow tonight at 7 o'clock at the FDR Library and Museum in Hyde Park, New York. We have a link to the Library and Museum's website, and you can find out more information. It's on our website at wamc.org/roundtable, along with this interview, wamc.org/roundtable. The name of the book is The Gatekeeper, Missy LaHand, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency. Catherine Smith, thank you very much for being with us. It's wonderful to have you in the region, and I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
A real pleasure. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Gatekeeper, Missy LaHand, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency. Catherine Smith will be at the FDR Library and Museum in Hyde Park tonight, beginning at 7 o'clock. The book is published by Touchstone. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.